Hello, and welcome to the BCMA podcast. And I'm the Communications Coordinator for the BC Museums Association. It's been a little while since we produced our last episode. The BCMA is gearing up for our 2019 conference in Prince George in October, but recently, a few of our council members got to experience a different conference right here in Victoria, BC. 3 years ago, the United Nations General Assembly proclaimed 2019 as the International Year of Indigenous Languages, based on a resolution of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. The goal of this declaration was to bring awareness to the importance of languages in people's lives, recognizing that language helps to form an individual's identity, cultural memory, and traditions. Despite this, Indigenous languages around the world are dying off at an alarming rate. From June 24th to 26th, the First Peoples Cultural Council and the First Peoples Cultural Foundation hosted the International Conference on Indigenous Languages Revitalization in Victoria, BC, in celebration of the 2019 International Year of Indigenous Languages. Hundreds of speakers gathered from over 20 countries for what was called the largest ever Indigenous Language Conference. The conference was held by and for Indigenous peoples. Workshops included successful models in Indigenous language revitalization, with a focus on knowledge sharing. Discussions celebrated the success and best practices that have been made in language revitalization and highlighted the important work currently happening in BC and around the world. Among the attendees of the conference was BCMA's Council President Tanya Muir and Council Member and Indigenous Advisory Committee Member Jordan Coble. Recently, I got to sit down and have a conversation with these two about their experience at the conference and their views on how to move forward with these issues. Presented here for our members who didn't get to attend, or for those looking for a recap of the conference, is our conversation.
First of all, just thanks so much for meeting here with me. I really appreciate you guys like taking your time. I understand you're both, you know, very busy and all that, and it's sometimes hard to coordinate schedules. So yeah, I really appreciate that. So I guess if we want to just kind of launch into it here, one of you want to start and just by talking about like what was your experience like at the conference?
Okay. So for me, having a chance to participate in the 2019 conference, Let the Languages Live, from the June 24th to 26th here in Victoria, was just absolutely incredible. For me, that was the largest gathering that I had ever been at of Indigenous language activists and educators. And there was participants from across the globe. So of course, from British Columbia, across Canada and the territories, New Zealand, Australia, South and Latin America, Eastern Europe representation. There were Samis as well from Norwegian area. And because of my work at the University of Victoria, with a certificate in Indigenous language revitalization, there were many of the partners that I work with in delivering the community-based programs. And because they happen in community, I often don't have a chance to meet partners face-to-face often, if at all. And so for me, it was also really a great time to get together and hear about the work that they were doing in their communities.
Great. Yeah, no, that sounds amazing. And Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, no, I was truly amazed by the conference. The wealth of knowledge that was provided from all areas of the globe, as Tanya mentioned, it was really powerful to see. It was an extremely positive experience, and that's something that is kind of undervalued, how positive a gathering like that can be, especially coming from a nation where our language revitalization efforts are quite often challenged for whatever reason. And I understand the reasons, but this, I think, created that awareness that there's not a right or wrong way to revitalize language, as long as you're focused on revitalizing the language and celebrating the language with all peoples. And so what I really took home was the message of sharing that information, sharing knowledge, transcending those cultural boundaries, those ethnic boundaries even, of sharing. And it was just extremely positive. It was empowering. It was, for me, there was a lot of parts that were very emotional for myself. And I mean that in the best way possible. It was that sense of pride that I had in the efforts that were being made by other nations, but also that sense of responsibility I have taking all that knowledge home and trying to replicate that within my own communities and nations. And so it was really an extremely positive experience, very informational. I loved hearing the variety of work that's being done at all levels, from grassroots of just getting people together to, getting urban centers together of indigenous peoples and revitalizing each other's languages and cultures, to creating dictionaries that are more comprehensive than, our traditional dictionaries that we have today. So, what it shows is that beautiful puzzle that is our language, and how there's so many pieces that can be connected to it, and that there's not really any limits as to how far that puzzle will go and how big it can be at the end of the day, because everyone can contribute. So it was very positive, very empowering. I have nothing but great things to say about it.
Right. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I obviously didn't get to attend the conference, but just from what I was able to follow on Twitter and social media and stuff like that, it looked really incredible. It seemed like a quite an experience, and so it's just really great. You guys got to experience that, I think. So why don't we keep in this same order here now? So Tanya, if you want to talk about, it may seem like a bit of an obvious question, but. I'm just kind of wondering, in your own words, why do you think this kind of work is important?
Okay. I'm really interested to hear Jordan's perspective, but I can just let you know through my work and my experience working with community, the importance of this work. Language plays a critical role, not only in communications and so on, but it also plays an absolutely critical role in around identity, traditions, memory, cultural heritage. And so with the loss of Indigenous languages, primarily through residential school and policies around Indigenous culture and heritage, it has for many disconnected individuals and communities from their cultural heritage. And in British Columbia, here in particular, where we have 203 nations and 34 different languages and 90 plus dialects, within Canada, considered the hotbed of Indigenous languages, yet many communities have very few speakers left, and there are communities as well that no longer have speakers of that language. And so the work that's being taken on by Indigenous language activists and educators and speakers and so on is critical not only to the preservation of the language, but those important cultural ties.
Hmm.
So maybe I'll just share, maybe that's what I can say on that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great. Yeah. And then Jordan, what about yourself?
Yeah, I agree with Tanya. The cultural identity is the main key. And I think what I've always struggled with when it comes to language revitalization practices in our community is getting that buy-in the buy-in from our younger generations.
Mm.
Because language isn't easy. But what I've been able to understand a little bit better is that yes, language is tough to learn, and it's tough to kind of generate your sense of connection to it, but what can be even tougher is the politics that come with it. And so what we can often get is a few interested individuals that are willing to learn the language, but they're not willing to put up with the politics, and I don't blame them for it. It is ridiculous how silly language politics can be.
Mm.
But at the same time, I know that I've struggled with cultural identity in the past. I've struggled with shame, you know, in being an Okanagan person. But I've never felt more proud of myself for when I speak. It's something that reminds me as to who I am. And I think, you know, when you spend enough time with people, they can see that in you. And I think that's where I've been able to get a lot of support through my community and through my nation, is because I've been willing to endure the language learning process and be the representative that can not just, you know, speak well in front of people, but speak my language quite well in front of people. And so a cultural identity is extremely important. But it's also the knowledge that comes with the language. You know, what I loved hearing is the differences between nations across Canada, across the world, but also the similarities that bring us together. You know, the polysynthetic nature of Indigenous languages, and something I thought was unique to the Okanagan, but by no means is it unique. It's something that we all kind of celebrate, which is wonderful, which also shows me that there's hope for being able to utilize the gifts that were shared at that conference, bring them back to our community in our own way, but utilize them as a blueprint to help us move forward with language revitalization efforts here, create a better sense of cultural identity within my community, but also just to create more awareness as to the importance of the language. And I think that was one of the hardest things for me to explain to language learners, is that when I'm teaching them, they often ask for translation. How do you say this in Okanagan, or how do you say that in English? What does that mean in English? And forever I was always saying, well, you can't translate that to English because it's not the way our language works. And so the conference really helped me get a better perspective as to how to represent that, why language and knowledge are one and the same, and why culture and language is one and the same, but how it's not a culture, a community culture that teaches language. It's individuals that learn the language and help incorporate that into the community model of knowledge. And so the conference is important, the work is important, because it creates an identity for Indigenous peoples. It gives us strength, it gives us unity. It's amazing how much support there was for this event too, you know, not just from the language warriors that are doing the work on the field and in the grasses, but from the politicians that were there in attendance and, you know, through video supporting there. The opening was amazing at the Royal BC Museum, and having, you know, Jack and everyone speak and be truly supportive, genuinely supportive of the conference and of the work that's being done. And I think that really helped build that bridge between the Living Language exhibit and the conference itself, to show that museums, to show that cultural centers and language warriors can work together alongside one another. And I think that emphasizes the importance of reconciliation, but also shows the process of reconciliation at the same time, which is just as important as whatever that final product, if there ever will be one, can be. You know, it's about working together and supporting one another and seeing the different avenues of support that need to be done, all the way from, you know, government, legislature, right down to community support. So it's important across all gamuts. It's important for our young people to take pride in that and recognize that if they're questioning their own identity as Okanagan people or as Haida people or whoever it is, then that identity will come to them through language. They'll never feel more proud of themselves, more proud to be an Indigenous person, you know, when they're speaking the language. It's just something that is of the utmost importance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really amazing, right? I was pretty excited to see early on. I think it really like spoke to something that, like, on the one hand is unfortunate, but also like it was really meaningful. I thought that like shortly after the conference was announced, it sold out, and then even like their waiting list like immediately filled up. And I think that just like said something to how much like need and response and support there was for this kind of work. And so I thought that was, like I said, on the one hand, really unfortunate, but also like really incredible in a way, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, great. So then, maybe Tanya, do you want to speak? Did you have like one like favorite part of the conference, or like one part that really stuck out?
Wow. well, as there's so many. It was really incredible from the opening right until closure.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the opportunity to connect with people, in particular partners. I really always enjoy hearing from Dr. Lorna Williams, and I'm so grateful that she has agreed to join us for the BC Museums Association conference that's happening in Prince George this year. Lorna Williams has been a lifelong advocate for language revitalization and training a next generation of teachers to be able to teach within their own language, within their own cultural setting, and has been a significant part of determining the federal language legislation and working provincially to support language revitalization. So her words are always inspiring, and she brings back stories from across the globe of other language work that's happening. I also really enjoyed so many of the interesting work that's been happening around Indigenous peoples creating systems and approaches for managing their own data and being able to create diverse archives and using technology to create apps and other types of ways for people to access their language. And there were many speakers that brought forward inspirational things that were happening. So I enjoyed that too. I know that's not just one, but it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. No, that's totally fair. I can understand why it'd be hard to pick up just one from all that. So Jordan, what about yourself? Did you have like one moment that was maybe like more like your favorite part, or like maybe the most meaningful part of the conference?
No, there's not one that stands out, because I think it's a good metaphor for the conference itself, is that there's so many things that are going on at different levels that you can celebrate any aspect of that conference and call it your favorite part, because it speaks to you in a different way. You know, the opening, having the children there was powerful for me. It's something that I think is a good way to start a conference, to show that there's future in Indigenous languages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a memorable moment. But you know, I could say that same thing about the gala event. It was extremely memorable. It's powerful, but in a different way, showing the difference between children learning the language and bringing forward their traditional songs and their traditional ways of being, to seeing, you know, Twin Flames sing and, you know, and Zillis perform in their traditional languages, to show that it crosses those cultural boundaries of music, of contemporary music. So there's, I think what my favorite part of it is that language transcends all boundaries. Even though we don't speak the same language, we can speak to each other's heart through our languages. And I think that's what my favorite part was, is that there wasn't one moment that said, yep, that's the defining factor of this conference. It was the accumulation of everything that went on, and then the finale of you know, I don't want to say saying goodbye, but just wishing everyone well on their way home. You know, I remember walking away after everything was said and done and taking my little lunch there and sitting along the coastline, and I just remember reflecting on such an amazing workshop or amazing conferences that was being hosted there, and feeling that good sense of place, you know, that sense of camaraderie, I think is my favorite part. I love when I speak with that gala event, I remember sitting around the table with, you know, some of the most important language warriors that we have in our nation, and going like, this is something I take for granted. You know, I sit around the same table with the same folks in our own communities at times, but sometimes I take that for granted. And so being in that moment, being in that great area, and feeling that sense of place in such a, you know, I love Victoria's, don't get me wrong, but such a colonized place. You know, when I'm sitting on the shoreline there, right in front of the Parliament buildings, right in front of the Empress, looking around going like, wow, this is a very colonized area. But I didn't feel out of place, because I felt that we belong. And then I started to notice all aspects of language around me. And then you get to see the people carrying their little lunch bags around, and you give them a little nod, and you have that sense of camaraderie saying, yeah, we're on the same path. You know, we don't speak the same language, but we're on the same path. And so there's not one part of the conference. Everything spoke to me.
but it's how you piece them all together and bridge the gaps between them that was valuable.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think I can see why it'd be difficult to just, you know, pick out a single part from that. And I kind of like the idea that the fact that the whole conference was like sort of, you know, analogous to the fact that there wasn't a single part of it that was maybe like the most standout, but just as a whole, it all sort of blend together.
I think what often people are looking for is an answer as to how to make language revitalization easy. And I think, you know, it was a good reminder that there's not a quick and simple solution for this work. And I think that's why I loved the conference so much, is because it showcased that it has to happen at all levels, and everyone plays the part off, you know, all the way from Prince Charles or whatever, you know. There's support all over the place, and now we have to bridge those gaps with one another so that we know what tools we have in our back pocket, so that when we come back, you know, for myself at a grassroots level, well, this is what we have available to us to help us move forward, and what we need to do to enact that, you know, the legislature and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense, right? It's definitely like a more complex problem than to like serve as an easy solution to it. So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. So yeah, I think you've both kind of touched on this already, but Tanya, I was wondering if you could start maybe talking specifically about like what do you think your hopes are for like the future of this like this issue and this kind of work.
I think one of the things that was really inspirational about the conference is there have been language advocates working tirelessly in their communities, and for to be able to bring people together in that way, which I think, you know, Adrian, you were saying how the conference filled up so quickly and ended up being, I heard, 1,000 strong, is my hope is that we will continue to support one another in this work, because it can be exhausting. People can be working with limited resources. There's oftentimes, you know, addressing some of the pain and healing around language loss and revitalization. And so it's very difficult work. We have in recent years seen some additional resources and support in British Columbia, the $50 million that was presented through First Peoples Language and Culture Council, and some of the legislation around the federal government and what's happening globally. And what I hope is that the momentum continues, and that we continue to support one another and to demonstrate most broadly the importance of language, and to continue to develop networks and support systems for those that are doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's excellent. I think that makes a lot of sense too. Jordan, like I said, you kind of already touched on this a little bit, but what about yourself? What are your kind of hopes for the future of this?
My hopes are that people recognize that there's a lot of people doing all work, and that that there's openness to share the methodologies as to how they got to the point where they're at. You know, I saw a lot of similarities between what I've experienced at the Language House and what they're doing in the Mohawk Territory.
Mm.
I saw a lot of similarities, but also a lot of differences that could benefit Language House and our language teaching methods. And so my hope is that people recognize that there's not one right way to teach language.
Mm.
Hoping that people will come home or go home with the message that work needs to be done first and foremost, but that we can't pick and choose the right and wrong ways, and that we should be supportive of one another. You know, it's really in many ways it's difficult to say what my hopes are. My hopes are that people want to learn the language,
right?
You know, I'm always mindful at these conferences, the majority of the people that are there are already doing students, or they're taking part it or they're supporting it in some way, one way, shape, or form. But they need to be able to bring that message home to their community so that those who aren't able to, weren't able to attend, still get that same sense of urgency to revitalize their language, or at least take part in the process and not sit idly by and complacent with the process. But I also want those who are able to attend the conference to take the message home that there's not, you know, a one right or wrong way to do it. I agree with Tanya in that I was really moved by Dr. Lorna Williams, you know, and I loved her analogy of the broken mirror that we're trying to piece back together. And the kaleidoscope that's being formed by the work that's being done. And that's not, you know, it's not the mirror that we're trying to create, but we're trying to create a reflection of what our languages are. And that truly spoke to me, and it really provided me with a little more hope for my own language in our community here. Like I said, we have difficulties with language politics. We have difficulties with politics in our community too. But it's also at the same time, it's never deterred our language warriors from continuing to do the work. But often, and I spoke to a lot of them at the conference, I spoke to a lot of them here in our community, they want to give up, right? And that's heartbreaking to me. And I know how they feel, because I feel the same sense of hopelessness at times, and where I just want to say, why am I doing this? I'm putting in so much effort for something that doesn't seem to have a future. And that's when the emotions come out of me, when I think about that conference and seeing the children come up opening the conference. It reminds me that it has to be done. And I think, you know, that again, my outline message is that there's not one right or wrong way to do it, but there's different perspectives that need to be included. There's different learning methods that need to be incorporated. There's different teaching methods to accommodate those learning methods that need to be valued. But it's also at the same time, it's of the utmost importance for our children to feel included in the process. I think often we shut them down because they're children, or we shut them down because they're young and they don't have, you know, what we call experience. But they're living that experience. Every time we shut them down, we give them that experience to say, hey, you're not invited into this. So my hope is that people will take this message home in a positive way and remind our children that it's important to do the work, and that there's not a right or wrong way, and there's not a quick, simple solution. But it's going to be worthwhile in the end, because it builds that cultural pride, that healthy sense of cultural pride within our own hearts and minds. When it comes to being the representative to stand up, or being that teacher, or even just being that student. And so it's, as much as I say that I'm hopeful, there's also a lot of concerns that I still have, but I feel that at the end of the day, at the very least, those who are in attendance can pull from one another and share with one another and help support one another. So that we don't have people wanting to give up anymore. It breaks my heart. I know that it's still going to happen. So we just need to be supportive of that and show that there's various avenues for that to take place, and that there's future, not just in language, but in, you know, in career opportunities with language, with the work that's being done, and so that they don't have to feel that they have to sacrifice their well-being to be a language warrior. That they can be supported in their efforts. They have to be supported in their efforts. And that's why I think it's a beautiful message to show that it spans across many different demographics, many different layers, because I think that financial compensation is important, but it's also that just emotional support that we need once in a while. Also, I'm hopeful that there's just more positive efforts being put forward into language revitalization in an open and inclusive way.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I think that's pretty incredible. I think that the fact that you say that there's no like one way to kind of teach these languages, or like one solid solution to it, kind of goes, it, you know, similarly goes back to the idea that it's such a complex problem that there's also like not one easy fix or easy solution to that, right? But it's but it's hopeful, like, too, right, that the younger generation and younger people are getting involved in it, and that's very encouraging at the same time, right? So, Yeah, so then kind of the final question here then. Tanya, going off kind of what you learned here, if people that like weren't able to attend the conference wanted to learn more or like get involved in these kind of topics, like how would you suggest they go about doing that?
Well, I can't recommend strongly enough. We're lucky in British Columbia to have the First Peoples Cultural Council, who were with UNESCO the host for this year's conference. Their website is absolutely, it's such a great resource to see what's happening, to find resources if one is interested to enter into a master apprentice, if they're interested in learning about language nests and immersion schools and different types of approaches to language revitalization. They put out a language report that they are able to reach out and communicate with communities across the province to understand the status of their language and some of the work that they're doing. And so I think to be able to spend some time and to understand what has the work that has already taken place. And then I think because through the BC Museums Association, I think in particular we have a real opportunity with museums and cultural centers. Jordan was just mentioning earlier with the opening at the Royal BC Museum that it demonstrated ways that museum heritage and cultural centers can support this work, because language as an integral part of intangible cultural heritage, I think the Living Languages exhibition that they have at the Royal BC Museum demonstrates not only the rich history of Indigenous communities, but also about contemporary communities and culture, and to talk about initiatives going forward and recognizing the language advocates. So I think within our sector, we have a really incredible opportunity to provide space for language activities, language classes. We have opportunities to work in partnership with community to share and celebrate some of the work that's happening in language, and so on. So maybe those are just a couple of ideas.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a lot already, right? It's a great place to start, if nothing else. So, and then yeah, Jordan, what about yourself?
Yeah, no, I agree with Tanya that there has to be support across all sectors. I think people need to, well, it has to be a two-way conversation, though, I think. You know, I work in a museum, but I also work in language revitalization, and I've been able to kind of blend the two together because the museum I happen to work in is a language that I'm also revitalizing, so that goes hand in hand. But when it's more of a provincial museum like the RBC Museum, well, we have to be able to create a safe environment for those conversations to take place, and so that if we have, you know, community members coming in saying this is what you should be doing, and we get it all the time, and I hate when I provide that you should be doing this. I don't like the should-haves. But it's what we face on a regular basis. So how do we receive those requests or those suggestions as museum professionals? And how do we create that cultural understanding that some people come in a very respectful way with their suggestions, and some people come with a more pointed direction and more pointed suggestions that don't come across as respectful, but they're still meaningful. So you have to be able to find value in whatever it is that they're suggesting at the same time. But you got to create awareness at the end of the day too. You know, you got to do it in a positive way. You got to make sure that we share the message of that conference, and that the conference as a whole, like I said, doesn't say that there's one right or wrong way to do it, but there's many tools in the toolkit that we can pull from, and sometimes we just have to learn how to utilize those tools. But it's creating that two-way conversation between what I'm going to call language allies and the language warriors to figure out how to support one another, create that safe environment for language revitalization practices to take place. I always use the example that, you know, I can't translate the feeling and the emotion of the language, which is the heart of the language, of the Okanagan language, but I can translate it for you into English as best I can in most cases, but you lose a lot of that. So how do we build that awareness that we're not just revitalizing the translations between English and Okanagan, we're revitalizing the spirit of the nation, the knowledge of the nation, the ancestors, and we're empowering our future generations with that knowledge, making it available to them, you know? And I think that will open up the doors and the avenues to create more language awareness and more language practices. I always, you know, I'm obviously coming from a Okanagan perspective, but in our nation here, we have a number of challenges. We have language that was provided, I'm gonna use this as an example. We have language that was provided on maps to indicate place names, but that was done in the early 80s. And so that was before we implemented the international phonetic alphabet within our language. And so it's done through English phonetics. And so I look at this map and I'm going, I can't read this because it's not in the language written. Language that I understand.
Oops.
Language that predates my birth. English translate some of these words and some of them don't even know anymore. So how do we bridge that gap? You know, and some of them are reluctant to share because they've been told not to. And it's hurtful for not just me, but my children to not have access to that knowledge that pertains to our community, to our literal neck of the woods here. And so we need to create more awareness of the importance of sharing, of understanding that what is shared right now might not be the exact same answer or product 10 years from now. You know, what was provided in the early 80s was the English phonetics for these name places. Now we have better tools in our toolkit to provide a more accurate representation of those names in written form, but we need to bridge that gap between the two and find the true meaning of that. But we also have to understand that 20 years down the road, that might change. 20 years down the road, we might have better tools. We might have better apps that can speak to that. We might totally abolish the written form of the language, but we need to at least keep that there to have it as an archive source of knowledge for our people. So it's creating awareness is what we need to do. Creating an understanding that this is taking place across Canada, across North America, across the world in many cases. And in many cases, we can utilize the examples of other nations to show the positives that come from sharing languages, sharing knowledge. I always use art as the example here in the Okanagan. Our artists always come to me going, why don't we have more better representation of Okanagan artists? You know, and I say, it's because we're not willing to share our artwork. Our artists are too reluctant to put it out there. They say they're Okanagan, because we don't have a defined art style for the Okanagan people. You know, but it's, you compare that to the West Coast, you know, we're way behind when it comes to that representation. But it's also because we're stifling our own artists, saying you're not good enough, or it's not Okanagan enough. But the reality is we're all Okanagan. It's just got to be supported in that and saying that's your Okanagan style and this is my Okanagan style. We might not see eye to eye on that, but it's still Okanagan nonetheless. So it's just about creating awareness, a positive reinforcement behind language awareness and language revitalization, showing that it's taking place across the world and showing that there's an indigenous peoples across the world. We often limit ourselves to, and I'm going to say it, we limit ourselves to the color of our skin. And that's why I love seeing the Sami people there, because it was showing, hey, look, you can be from a different part of the world and be indigenous, you know, and that's always been the message that we share out of here, is that most of our languages, you know, when we refer to ourselves as indigenous people, the translations actually translate to just people. It's not indigenous people, it's just people. And so at the end of the day, we're all people, and we're all connected to some place at some point for our ancestry. But we can also re-indigenize ourselves to new places, and that's fine too, but we have to be willing to share and educate so that it's done in a respectful way, and be supportive of one another after that first initial conversation takes place, and so that other nation members know that this person is doing their best to be an ally in the efforts of revitalization of culture and languages.
Yeah, I guess that's a That's quite a bit, but that's really amazing work.
Sorry,
actually.
I'm long-winded.
No, that's fine. It's no, I appreciate it. It's just, I suppose it's just a lot to, maybe a lot to take in all at once, but yeah, no, I definitely appreciate the thoughts, though. So that's all the questions I have. Was there anything else from either of you that you guys wanted to add, or something I might have missed at all, or...
I think, as I say, this was just really a unique and inspirational event. My understanding is that because 2019 had been named by UNESCO as the Year of Indigenous Languages, that it was the why the conference was put on at this particular time. And so I do hope there'll be future opportunities to get together like this again.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, is there any word that there will be a second conference like this? Or like, is it hopefully going to turn into an annual thing? Or is that sort of all to be determined at this point?
I haven't heard word in regards to this particular conference offering. There are other forums in which people may meet on this with this work. However, this was the largest gathering that I've been to, and it would be tremendous if we were able to do it again, but I had not heard that there was necessarily any word about the capacity to do this annually.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, so Jordan, was there anything else that you wanted to add at all, or?
No, it's just, except for the, you know, what Tanya just said, that it's important that we continue this conversation. I don't know if there'll ever be a conference of this magnitude. But at the same time, I think it's important that we do that follow-up. And it was mentioned multiple times during the conference that, yes, the Year of Indigenous Languages, but this isn't just a year of our lives, right? We people that do this work, the true language warriors, dedicate their lives to this. And so as much as there's a year dedicated to Indigenous languages, there has to be a lifetime committed to it. It was also mentioned, you know, that same efforts, the same finances, the same... resources that were put in to colonize Indigenous people needed those same resources, or the same amount of time and efforts needed to be put into revitalizing those same cultures and peoples and languages. You know, and that's what needs to be emphasized, is that they've been trying to wipe us out for 150 years, and we're finally starting to get recognition of value of knowledge and importance of transcending these boundaries to say it's not just Indigenous knowledge that's important to Indigenous peoples, it's Indigenous knowledge that's important to all peoples across the world, essentially. And so, yeah, there's an opportunity to have a conference similar to this, or same conference over again. I wouldn't even care if this exact same presenters, the exact same agenda, I would attend again, and I would bring as many people with me as possible, because I've, you know, this is definitely the biggest language conference I've attended, but I've attended, you know, the Salish conference down south in Spokane, which has upwards of 600 to 800 people every once in a while. And it speaks to people. Having my family attend who don't speak the language and coming home going, hey, can you teach me? You know, it's only one person here and there, but it's that one person can make a difference in the lives of who knows, you know, and we need that trickle-down effect. So we need to support more conferences of this nature, and we just need to show, reinforce the positive aspects of language revitalization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And then, yeah, and I think if nothing else, it's those are some like great closing words to this conversation. So, yeah. Okay, well, I guess if that's it then, I just again want to thank you both so much for like taking the time to talk with me today. Yeah, and I guess I'll let you guys know when there's... Thank you so much for listening to the BCMA podcast. That's all the time we have for this month. But I'd like to thank Jordan and Tanya once again for taking the time to talk with me about their conference experience. For those of you looking for a written version of this conversation, we have a transcript available on our website, museumsassn.bc.ca.
We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, please subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play, and listen to past episodes on the BCMA website. The BC Museums Association receives operational support from the BC Arts Council. We also gratefully acknowledge the support of the Royal BC Museum in providing a home for the BCMA Secretariat. The BCMA Secretariat is located on the traditional lands of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations.